It's Wednesday, April 12th. You're listening to VOA's International Edition. I'm Victor Beatty. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson criticizes Moscow either for not taking seriously or showing incompetence in failing to keep Syria from using chemical weapons.
But this distinction doesn't much matter to the dead. We can't let this happen again.
Also, tensions with North Korea and the fallout from the forcible removal of a passenger that sparked global outrage. Those stories and more on VOA's International Edition. U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson is in Moscow today. He meets later with his Russian counterpart, Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov. The meeting, their second, comes at a tense time in bilateral relations over Russia's alleged involvement in influencing last year's U.S. election, Ukraine, arms control, NATO, and Syria. Tillerson commented on the trip in Italy Tuesday as he prepared to leave for the Russian capital after 2 days of talks with his G7 partners. He expressed disappointment Russia was unable to assure the world that Syria was free of chemical weapons before their latest use April 4th.
It is also clear Russia has failed to uphold the agreements that had been entered into under multiple UN Security Council resolutions. These agreements stipulated Russia as the guarantor of a Syria free of chemical weapons, that they would also locate, secure, and destroy all such armaments in Syria. Stockpiles and continued use demonstrate that Russia has failed in its responsibility to deliver on its 2013 commitment. It is unclear whether Russia failed to take this obligation seriously or Russia has been incompetent. But this distinction doesn't much matter to the dead. We can't let this happen again.
Nearly 90 civilians, including children, were killed in a village in the north of Syria in what's widely believed to have been an attack from the air using sarin gas. Tillerson told reporters he hopes the Russian government concludes that it has aligned itself with an unreliable partner in Bashar al-Assad. It was the same message sent by White House spokesman Sean Spicer Tuesday, who said President Donald Trump entered office in January hoping to find areas of cooperation with Moscow.
He entered office thinking that if he can get a deal with Russia in our national interest, which I discussed during the opening remarks as part of Secretary Tillerson's conversation with Foreign Minister Lavrov, then we're going to do it. But if we can't get a deal and if we can't find an area of national interest, then we won't. And in this particular case, it's no question that Russia is isolated. They have aligned themselves with North Korea, Syria, Iran. That's not exactly a group of countries that you're looking to hang out with. With the exception of Russia, they are all failed states. There is clearly Russia is on an island when it comes to its support of Syria or its lack of, frankly, acknowledgement of what happened. The facts are on our side. The actions of Syria are reprehensible. And I think that Russia has been party to several international agreements that Syria is not holding up to, in fact, that Russia needs to hold themselves up to. So I think the president has been very clear with his stance on Russia. And in this particular case, we're going to be very forceful, and I think as will Secretary Tillerson during his visit, to make sure that we let Russia know that they need to live up to the obligations that it has made.
Russia has said the Syrian government did not carry out the chemical weapons attack.
Russian
Colonel General Sergei Rutskoy Tuesday said, according to information available to him, militants are bringing in poisonous substances to the Khan Sheikhoun area, the Jera airport, western outskirts of Aleppo, and eastern Ghouta. They aim to create another pretext, he said, for accusing the Syrian government of using chemical weapons and providing new airstrikes by the U.S. He warned such steps are unacceptable. U.S. Defense Secretary Jim Mattis at the Pentagon Tuesday said there's no doubt Syria carried out last week's chemical weapons attack. University of Denver International Relations Professor Jonathan Edelman told me that despite global condemnation of the attack, there is no way Russia will abandon the Assad regime, at least in the short term.
If you look at it from a Moscow perspective, from that of Sergei Lavrov, the foreign minister, as well as Vladimir Putin, There's no reason to give up. They're winning. This is very important. The real issue for them is not whether or not they keep Assad. They keep Assad for the short run, and then they dump him as a liability once they reestablish the regime. And they've made it fairly clear off the record that's what they intend to do. But the real issues that they've got to deal with from their perspective are different. What do they do about Iran? They don't want an Iranian-dominated Middle East, and yet this is exactly what we're beginning to see. And what do they do about Turkey, which is a NATO ally, but nevertheless has been increasingly alienating the United States? And then what do they do about the Sunni Arab countries that have been really leaning towards them, have been, for example, Egypt's bought $2 billion worth of Russian weapons. The Israelis talk on a regular basis. Bibi Netanyahu's been to Moscow five times in the last 20 months. So they've got some really critical decisions to make, but it isn't just about Syria, because that's the easier one. You get it reestablished as a country, you let Bashar Assad stay for some minimal amount of time, and then, to the great relief of the Westerners, you dump him. But the real power, as it was before with Assad, are the people around him. But the issues from Moscow's point of view are, what are we out to do here? Now that we're back in the Middle East, who are we going to side with? Because you can't be on the Iranian side and the Turkish side and then against the Sunni Muslim countries, which recently have been creating almost an entente with the Israelis lined up against Iran. And they're not doing well in Yemen. So this is, I think, the critical issue, is to think about it from Moscow's point of view. They've got a way out, but with the West. And the West will take that in a minute. But then they've got the bigger question. If they're going to be the main force in the Middle East until the Americans reestablish themselves, which side are they going to be on? And historically, they've hated the Persian Empire. They invaded it four times over 200 years. They hate the Ottoman Turks. But they're not easy partners either for, say, the Saudis. So they've got some very difficult issues, and they want to see what they're being offered.
Mr. Tillerson, before leaving Italy, said Russia failed in its role as a guarantor of a 2013 deal under which the Assad regime promised to give up chemical arsenal. He said it's unclear whether Russia failed to take this obligation seriously and whether Russia has been incompetent, but this distinction doesn't much matter to the dead. We can't let this happen again. Is he putting Russia on the defensive?
He's putting him on the defensive, but the Russians are unimpressed. Lying and cheating goes on among all nations, except the United States, much less than it does that, very little, but a lot of nations do it. And the Russians are major actors in dissembling, and they've done it again. And in terms of most other countries outside of the United States, they're interested in building that relationship. Even Angela Merkel talks about improving the relationship with Russia, because Russia is near and the United States is far. So from the Russian perspective, they want to see, you know, what's about to happen in this meeting between Sergei Lavrov, the Russian foreign minister, and the American Secretary of State, is going to be very curious, because they come from very different perspectives about what they want and what they expect. And the Russians feel, we've got Trump, we are back after what happened to the disintegration of the Soviet Union in 1991, and, when we also did it in Georgia, we did it in Ukraine, we did it in Crimea. And now we've done it in Syria. But the terms, that's up for negotiation. They are waiting to see, outside of all of the, from their view, you know, just kind of words that are flying out in, from America and elsewhere. They want to know what they're going to be offered to do this. And that's where the real negotiation begins. And it'll be fascinating to see how the Trump administration plays it.
Jonathan Edelman said whatever the outcome of the talks in Moscow, he is sure of one thing. The Russians are, in the end, realists. And if they eventually conclude their interest in Syria and the broader Middle East would be better served without Bashar al-Assad. This is VOA's International Edition. Now for the latest, what's hot on social media? We turn to our social media reporter, Andrew Polshevsky.
White House Press Secretary Sean Spicer was capturing social media headlines on Tuesday after talking in a press briefing about Syrian President Bashar al-Assad's use of chemical weapons. Spicer said that even Hitler did not use chemical weapons during World War II, but many people on social media were very quick to point out that millions were gassed in concentration camps by the Nazis during World War II, which would seem to conflict with Spicer's statement. Lots of people addressing this and calling him out on social media. Spicer also made headlines when he appeared to say that there were no chemical weapons used in Holocaust centers during World War II, many people skewering Spicer for using that term instead of calling them concentration camps. Other people, however, defending Spicer, saying that it was a linguistic slip-up and that the bigger focus should be on the substance behind his words, not the specific terms he used. And a big story today from Instagram. As I told our colleague Lori London last week in our social media segment, both Facebook and Instagram, which is owned by Facebook, have been copying elements of Snapchat, from using lenses, which are very similar to Snapchat filters, to having disappearing photos, which is really the crux of what Snapchat is. Well, now Instagram is trying to one-up Snapchat on its biggest feature, disappearing content. Starting today, Instagram will combine its messaging feature and its disappearing photo and video feature into one place called Instagram Direct. Now, the idea is to make it easier for users to send disappearing content, and as Facebook surely hopes, more of those users will be doing so through Instagram than Snapchat with these new adjustments. Disappearing content has been incredibly popular among social media users, and Instagram has said that it's among their most popular features. Now, what remains to be seen is if this is another copycat case, or if it marks a serious incursion by Facebook and Instagram onto Snapchat's turf.
Thanks, Andrew. You can follow him on Twitter at APAL. Among the top stories on the VOA website, the U.S. blasts Russian denials of Syrian government's chemical weapons use. President Trump tweets North Korea looking for trouble with nuclear weapons development. And Attorney General Sessions declares new era in immigration enforcement. Expanded coverage of these stories and more on the VOAnews.com website and our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition.
News happens around the clock, and VOA brings you the latest at the top of each hour.
This is Joe Palca.
I'm Victor Beatty.
Francis Alonso.
Tune in for a summary of the news at the top of each hour, around the clock, on The Voice of America. Hourly newscasts on the radio and on the internet at voanews.com. VOA, a leader in news coverage for over 70 years.
North Korea stoked tensions Tuesday, warning of a nuclear attack on the U.S. at any sign of American aggression. The warning came as a U.S. Navy carrier strike force positioned itself off the Korean Peninsula. But Defense Secretary Jim Mattis Tuesday did not say the aircraft carrier Carl Vinson carried any particular orders regarding Pyongyang and its nuclear and missile programs.
She's stationed there in the Western Pacific for a reason. She operates freely up and down the Pacific, and she's just on her way up there because that's where we thought it was most prudent to have her at this time. There's not a specific demand signal or specific reason why we're sending her up there.
In addition to the Carl Vinson, two destroyers and a cruiser have been dispatched to the area. The Pentagon is quiet whether there's any submarine present. President Trump tweeted Tuesday that North Korea was looking for trouble and the U.S. would solve the problem with or without China's help. Mr. Trump hosted a summit last week with his Chinese counterpart, Xi Jinping. White House spokesman Sean Spicer was asked about that Tuesday.
I've said this before on a variety of topics. The president is not one who's going to go out there and telegraph his response. I think he keeps all options on the table. He keeps his cards close to the vest. And as he showed last week with respect to Syria, when the president is willing to act, it's going to be decisive and proportional. He has made it clear with respect to North Korea that their behavior and their actions with respect to the missile launches is not tolerable. The last thing we want to see is a nuclear North Korea that threatens the coast of the United States, or for that matter, any other country and any other set of human beings. So we need stability in that region, and I think he has put them clearly on notice.
Spicer responding to Pyongyang's latest nuclear attack threat said there's no evidence it has that capability. Stephen Norper is senior director at the New York-based Korea Society and a professor at Columbia University. He said anticipation is building Pyongyang may use a date like Saturday's 105th birthday of founder Kim Il-sung to conduct a sixth nuclear test.
Well, I think everyone's watching it closely. China, Japan, certainly the United States and South Korea. Indeed, a sixth nuclear test would be yet further evidence that North Korea is in non-compliance with United Nations Security Council resolutions. Likely, if the pass tester any indication, it will show an increased yield, which means an enhanced technology, enhanced capability, and greater lethality. And that's all cause for concern. So hopefully North Korea will restrain from that, but there's no guarantee.
President Trump, in his latest tweet, said North Korea is looking for trouble and the United States will solve the problem with or without Beijing's help. What might have been exchanged in terms of concerns about North Korea between Presidents Trump and Xi Jinping?
It's hard to say. The Chinese have made clear that there were no specific agreements, either publicly or privately. The expression has been used that Xi Jinping was circumspect about North Korean issues. However, I think the U.S. read is a little bit different. The U.S. administration expressed that Xi and the Chinese delegation had agreed that the North Koreans are at a dangerous threshold and are showing a capability that would deserve some sort of response. I think the Americans took that as something of a go-ahead by way of more unified concern, but Trump is clearly wanting to see them take stronger measures and make pronouncements or otherwise rein in North Korea. And I guess that's what the tweets indicate, that his expectation is that that happen, and he's promising rewards, at least by way of trade, if China appears to more publicly embrace the American position.
China's U.N. ambassador Tuesday called the Korean situation, quote, tense, repeated China's call for a return to dialogue with North Korea. Reuters reports on Tuesday a fleet of North Korean cargo ships headed home mostly fully laden after China ordered its trading companies to return coal, according to sources with direct knowledge of trade.
Yeah, that's very, very interesting. And it does appear that those vessels returned to the port at Nampo. And so that indicates a different behavior on the part of the Chinese, if indeed that was the case. Chinese signaled earlier in the year that it would be reducing or eliminating for the remainder of the year its coal imports, but to actually return vessels laden with coal is a step that perhaps China designed to be demonstrable to the Americans, South Koreans, and others that they were taking stronger measures against North Korea.
Stephen Norper said a tightening of sanctions, not military force, will likely be the method to get North Korea back to the negotiating table. He said Secretary of State Tillerson will address the U.N. Security Council later this month. His remarks about North Korea may provide some clarity on evolving U.S. policy. This is VOA's International Edition. 2 days after Kentucky physician David Dow was forcibly removed from his seat late Sunday on United Airlines Flight 3411, the chief executive of the airline, Oscar Munoz, issued a public apology, promising to fix it. He said no one should be treated this way. Henry Hartefelt is a San Francisco-based travel industry analyst with the Atmosphere Research Group. He said he expects United to survive this public relations disaster, but is surprised how strong and widespread the reaction has been.
I think it shows both the power of social media. I think we all intuitively know that. But I think it also shows the fear many of us have about how airlines treat passengers, and how we are now left to wonder what rights, if any, do we really have.
Sure. That's an interesting point you make. U.S. airlines are bumping passengers off flights at the lowest rate since 1995, according to an analysis of federal data by the Reuters news agency. What rights do passengers have when they board an aircraft?
Very few, really. I mean, airlines have a contract of carriage that you agree to when you book your ticket, and they state what their policies are. Very rarely will an airline forcibly remove a passenger from a plane once that person has boarded to accommodate a crew member. In the contract of carriage, if it says you have to give up your seat, you have to give up your seat. It's important to note that the passenger on this flight was not interfering with the crew, was not affecting safety. But there are still issues when the airline tells you to do something, you pretty much have to comply.
Usually these issues are resolved in a very peaceful manner. Did the airline cross a line at all? You're suggesting that maybe it didn't.
Oh, no. United crossed many, many lines. First, they clearly didn't offer enough money for people to give up their seats. Everybody has their price. This is economics 101. The agent had the ability to offer $1,000 or even more than $1,000, and for whatever reason, did not do so. Two, instead of trying to get an airline manager involved, the agent went for the nuclear option, bring in the police. Three, you have to wonder, why did the agent not explain to the crew passengers had boarded and they would have to look into alternative forms of transportation? Why did Republic, the airline that actually employed those flight attendants and pilots that needed to get to Louisville, wait until so late to send these people to the gate to take this flight? And clearly, Chicago law enforcement officer who was involved in this incident, who is the person who struck the passenger, crossed a line by becoming violent.
Henry Hartefelt said there are many lessons for passengers and air carriers to learn from this incident. He also said United and its alliance partner Air China will need to find ways to repair the damage to United's lucrative business in China, where hundreds of millions have followed the case on social media. This is International Edition. Well, some music stars go on to pursue acting careers as well. VOA's Border Crossings host Larry London now joins International Edition's Sarah Williams with details of the release of a new single by a member of a popular group who's also working on an acting career.
Today we're going to talk about a member of one of the most popular boy bands in music these days, One Direction's very own Harry Styles. And certainly one of the best-looking and most popular members of One Direction. He's going to make his big-screen major film debut this coming up July in a film called Dunkirk, which is set in the war in the 1940s. He had to shave all of his long hair off just for this particular role. But he's got his first song now in over a year and a month since One Direction went on hiatus. He's the latest member of One Direction to go solo, and we'll check out the song Sign of the Times, and then I'll tell you all about Harry Styles and his upcoming album.
Just stop your crying, it's a sign of the times. Welcome to the final show. I hope you're wearing your best clothes.
So tell us more about this upcoming album by Harry Styles.
This is Harry Styles' first song off of his upcoming album, Sign of the Times. A lot of people have been anxiously awaiting this song. Zayn left One Direction at the start of the year and has since gone on to have a very successful solo career. He has no plans to return to One Direction. The other guys in the band are on hiatus. They say they're going to do solo stuff, and then One Direction will return. They've promised their fans, the One Directioners, that they will reunite and resume. Although it's hard to imagine that because each guy is doing a solo album and solo projects and they're moving very slowly in that direction. Niall had a song called This Town. He's only got one song so far and it did very well. And he said he's taking his time with his album. And Lewis Tomlinson just put out a song with Steve Aoki a month ago. And Liam is working on some new music and just became a daddy with his girlfriend, Cheryl Cole, a former member of the girl band Girls Aloud. And so Harry Styles is the latest to actually release a solo song, which we just played. Now, there's no word on the title of the album or the exact release date, but it comes with a little bit of controversy already because when it first came out last Friday, Spotify made an error in how they uploaded it to their website domain. So when people went to stream the song, to download the song, Sign of the Times, they couldn't do it.
Oh.
So that, you know, nothing puts a kink in the armor quicker than your inability to actually purchase the song you're trying to purchase.
Absolutely.
And so Columbia Records, very upset about it, but there's still talk that it is going to be the song to dethrone Ed Sheeran from the number one spot in the UK. So we'll see if that actually comes to pass. But it's certainly going to be up near the top of the charts when it actually makes its chart appearance this week. Harry, you know, there's no word on what his plans are as far as touring goes, if he is planning a tour or not. But he said he's already recorded several solo songs. This is the first to be released, but there are several already in the can. And, of course, he's going to be promoting Dunkirk, the film.
Yes.
And there's talk of him getting a role in a Disney film as well. So he's a handsome lad. And he's well on his way to a successful solo career, if that's the direction that he wants to stay in. But he promises to be back with One Direction.
And with the acting career as well.
Yes, he's going to be popular, he's going to be hot, and things are just getting started. Interesting thing about One Direction is it was a year ago in March that they took their hiatus, and yet they were last year's most profitable group, making over $100 million. And yet they really didn't work that hard.
Yeah.
So it's kind of amazing. I guess you don't have to work that hard to make a lot of money if you're in the band One Direction.
At least for some people. Okay.
Yes.
All right. Thanks a lot, Larry. That's Larry London. He's the host of VOA's Border Crossings. Just stop your crying. It's a sign of the times. We gotta get away from
here. That sound from the number one hit Centerfold featuring the J. Giles Band from 1983. Lead guitarist Jay Giles, whose full name was John Warren Giles Jr., died apparently of natural causes Tuesday at his home in Groton, Massachusetts. He was 71. The band, which formed in 1967, blended blues rock, R&B, soul, and pop, and released 11 studio albums. The group's biggest hits include Must Have Got Lost and Love Stinks. Jay Giles, dead at 71. And that's International Edition. You can find us at voanews.com. Like us also on Facebook, VOA Now. Our director, Tracy Carter, the engineer, Chaz Hall. I'm Victor Beatty, coming to you from Studio 22 at VOA headquarters in Washington. Magical touch.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at voanews.com/editorials. Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
At the start of the holiest week in the Christian calendar, terrorists struck two Coptic Christian churches in Egypt. A bomb exploded inside St. George's Church in the northern city of Tanta during Palm Sunday religious services. And, in a separate incident, a suicide bomber detonated a device outside St. Mark's Coptic Orthodox Cathedral in Alexandria. Scores of people were killed and over 100 injured in the attacks. ISIS has claimed responsibility for both attacks. Egyptian President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi, who recently met with President Donald Trump in Washington, announced 3 days of mourning for the victims of the attacks and declared a 3-month state of emergency. Parliament has approved the measure. President Trump spoke by phone with President al-Sisi on the day of the attacks, conveying his deepest condolences to Egypt and the families who lost loved ones in the heinous terrorist attacks. The White House said in a statement that the president also expressed his confidence in President al-Sisi's commitment to protect Christians and all Egyptians. Acting U.S. State Department spokesperson Mark Toner also condemned the attacks and reiterated that the United States will continue to support Egypt's security and stability in its efforts to defeat terrorism. The UN Security Council called the attacks heinous and cowardly. In a statement, the Security Council reaffirmed that terrorism in all its forms and manifestations constitutes one of the most serious threats to international peace and security. The members of the Security Council reiterated that any acts of terrorism are criminal and unjustifiable, regardless of their motivation, wherever, whenever, and by whomsoever they are committed. The Security Council emphasized the need to bring perpetrators, organizers, financiers, and sponsors of these reprehensible acts of terrorism to justice, and urged all states to cooperate actively with the government of Egypt and all other relevant authorities